Welcome again to the Good Word. We resume our study of Joshua. I am your host, Bob Resch. With me are my conversation partners, Matilda Fry and Jody Washburn. We resume our study of the book of Joshua with lesson two called Surprised by Grace. But I would like to start in a different part of the Bible. We remember that both Luke and John began their books with fine introductions. Question for our consultants. If you were invited to give an introduction for the book of Joshua, what might you write?
It would be interesting to learn about how this book came to be written, when and why, instead of just like plunging us in directly into.
Would you like to help us with that?
So it seems that the introduction to the book of Joshua might be seen as the book of Deuteronomy.
Yeah.
Because there is where we have the Torah, the laws that are supposed to work and be used in the land. And then Joshua goes and tells us how this land comes into the possession of the people who have the laws from God.
In your opinion, is it okay for Christians who accept the Bible as the Word of God to ask questions like, who wrote, to whom, under what circumstances, about when?
Yes, I think so. Several books in the Bible, like, for example, Luke, tells us something about that. And so biblical books, some of them have that kind of like approach to give us their accounts of the writer, of witnesses to it, locations, or directly like circumstances. And other books do not. And so as biblical scholars and readers, we would like to know some of that background. And that is part of our education that we do also here when we study the Bible.
So if the book does not make specific claims about its authorship or setting, how would you discover such things?
I think maybe Jody would say, for example, in a book like Joshua, archaeology could help by pointing us to the sites that provide some information about locations, about things that take place or names that we have in the book. In other cases, maybe language helps us to uncover some of the elements of like the time periods when certain words are used in other texts, and then do comparative work on those things that would help us understand some of those questions.
I have heard such sciences referred to as criticism. Is there anything wrong with criticism?
Depends.
I'm an ophthalmologist, and all my professional career, I have criticized my own work and asked other people about theirs and got hints on how to improve our work. Is that criticism?
I think it is important to learn about these things. I believe all our Bible translations, for example, have come about because of studies, critical studies. For example, in our text that we consider, for example, the original language of the text, the Hebrew and the Greek Bible, we have parts on every page, and that is called biblical criticism. Right, that give us information about documents that existed early, early manuscripts and documents that give us some information about certain aspects in the text. So now, there are other elements that can be added in addition to that kind of criticism to learn about contextual elements.
So does an art critic ever destroy works of art? Does a music critic try to interrupt concerts? So it means simply careful study, is
yes.
that right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, let's jump into Joshua, and let's do a little pretend here. Let's pretend that you are a spy, hiding on Rahab's roof, trembling under a covering of flax. Imagine that you heard officials banging on Rahab's door, and asking difficult questions, would this be a good time for prayer?
If you're hiding, probably yes, you would pray.
And,
yes.
And if you, let's imagine ourselves in such a circumstance on Rahab's roof, what might you pray if you were a spy on her roof, hiding under the flax? Would you pray, O Lord of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, please help Rahab to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I think there's a sort of, maybe not completely universal, but semi-universal way that we behave in prayer in moments of crisis, dire consequences. It's our language becomes quite simplified. Help!
Yes, but if you're on a roof hiding, you probably don't shout help.
No, but you can shout it internally. But I wonder here if we can also expand. Maybe this is going to sound disrespectful to say it this way, but I'll take the risk and say it anyway, but expand our sense of what could fall under the umbrella of prayer, because I feel like you're asking, where might our attention go if we are living in a world where we understand divine power to be part of that world, right? And we are feeling our very survival is threatened, right? Where might our attention go? And it seems to me that just like Rahab is madly thinking, okay, what resources do I have? How can I behave in this circumstance in a way that will lead to the best outcomes for the people that are under my care? I imagine that the spies are thinking the same thing, right? What might be the best way to navigate this? What are the various resources I have access to? And what do I need to do with that information to get the best outcomes for the people who are under my care?
Thank you. I like that. Our lesson guide reminds us that God valued Rahab specifically for her exceptional courage, for her brave faith, for being an agent of salvation, and for choosing Israel's God. If God valued Rahab for all these sterling qualities, did God also reward Rahab for her bold and creative lie?
Well, I have the impression that when we read a story like this one, then maybe there is a certain, you know, a certain value hierarchy in the text, that the question of lying is not the one that is explored and is the text does not want us to go for that. Otherwise, we would be pointed to kind of like explore the, you know, why would she lie and would God approve of that? But the text goes about the life of the two men who are mm-hmm. hiding and so on. And so that is placed on a higher level of, the moral ethical question in this context here. But in addition to that, there are a few very interesting elements in this particular story in the way it is written in its ancient text. So let me give you one.
Please.
The spies are going into the land, and it says in the text to search out the land. But the word for search is the word for dig out the land. At the same time, they are lying underneath the flax.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, probably praying to not get dug out. So in a way, even a story like that, has its subtle nuances in the way it is told in its original text, kind of like it always like it did for us right now. It brings a smile to mm-hmm. us.
To all three faces. Yes, thank
and
you.
And the text has, if we zoom out from this particular kind of small window, the text has a lot of these subtle but not so subtle allusions. Like, to give you one example, later on in the, you know, the monarchy history. So the Israel is understood as the house of David, for instance, right? The household is there's the immediate household local, and then there's the king, and there's the temple. It's the house of God, etc. And so some scholars point out how here the existence of that household that these pieces of literature are pointing toward or moving toward is coming into existence through the household of Rahab. Rahab's is the first household mentioned in the book of Joshua. And Joshua then provides this sort of foundational piece where these threads then go forward into the other books. And the other kind of literary piece that I find, I mean, I didn't really say why I find that humorous. I think overall, this is a text, like Matilda is saying, that prioritizes concern for powerful men. But within the text, we also have little tidbits that say, but hey, this whole story was made possible through the household of a woman who would have been considered perhaps in or perhaps out of the legitimate society. And then the other piece of the textual or narrative art of the opening part of the book of Joshua is that in a way it's one, not the, but one story, one telling of the birth of a nation.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the people passing through the waters.
Yes.
You have a scarlet cord that is being lowered and then becomes the sign later on. So some scholars point out how throughout these opening chapters of Joshua, you have these allusions that paint a picture of the birth metaphor used to tell this particular telling of the birth of a nation.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Can we assume that Rahab is a Canaanite worshipped more than one god?
Well, as one commentator pointed out, she's more monotheistic than the Israelites at this point in our story. So her exclamation about God is much more direct and singular than what we find in some of the other stories.
Well, if she were a polytheist worshipping the many gods of Canaan, what was it about the God of Israel which got her attention?
Should we go on?
I think she explained that. I think she said, your God is tough compared to ours.
Mm-hmm.
Look what he did to those and those and those. And I think I'd feel safer with your God.
Well, even the location where we are crossing over helps us see something from other parts of the Pentateuch. Like the place is called Shittim before they get to Jericho. And now Rahab is called a harlot in Jericho. And that points us back to another story in the book of Numbers where we had somebody who committed harlotry in Shittim. And so this story becomes, again, one that is like, you know, paving the way for this theme that is we come across in all of these books, from Deuteronomy to the end of Kings,
yep,
on the question of the people committing this activity that is considered idolatry and harlotry against God.
Thank you. Next time we will cover the crossing of the Jordan as we continue our study of the book of Joshua. Again, thanks to Corin Bailey, our broadcast technician. Thanks to our conversation partners, Dr. Fry and Dr. Washburn. Again, I am Bob Resch. We hope that you can all join us again next week for more of The Good Word.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.